Hello, and welcome to another episode of Endeavors. Today, I speak with dancer and choreographer Jamal Berkmar. That's coming up on Endeavors. Hello, and welcome back. And once again, I apologize for the lack of intro music. As I mentioned, I had to get my computer repaired and basically everything was wiped. I haven't had a chance yet to kind of wiggle with all my backups and get music and stuff. I hoped to do that within the next few days to a couple of weeks, so bear with me, but music will be returning to the podcast shortly. I also finally bit the bullet and bought a UK adapter for my laptop. I've got one of those like 4-in-1 travel adapters, but it doesn't always, it kind of gets a little bit limp in the wall, the outlet at times. I'm just like, you know what, no, I'm gonna get a UK one for my computer because I have one for my phone, so then I won't have to rely on that guy anymore. I've now completed 2 weeks here on call. Started exploring a little bit. Got to go to a cocktail party at a house on the other end of the island the other day. So that was kind of my first time getting out of the village, so to speak, I guess you could say. But it was at night, so you know, I didn't really get to see like what that looked like during the day. Had a couple of walks along the bay. I was gonna rent a bike today and, you know, maybe try to get to other islands, but my legs are a bit sore. I just think from, you know, getting used to being in the kitchen again and you know, maybe not hydrating as much as I should, but I still got another month and a half here, so that will definitely come in terms of me being able to explore. And you know, who knows, maybe I'll end up in a car and go up on a road trip, so to speak. Speaking of trips, my interview, my guest on today's show is a dancer and choreographer Jamal Berkmar. And he choreographed a piece for a big festival in Toronto called Fall for Dance North. It's one of the big sort of dance festivals that are in Canada and in Toronto. And there's a program called Heartbeats, which is on October 4th and 5th. And his piece, I Think We Should Start Over, will be performed in that. He was the choreographer, and it is performed by the Kandoko Dance Troupe, which is based out of London, England. Yes, Jamal is a UK-based performer. And, you know, Fall for Dance North, the team behind this is MPMG, or Murray Patterson Marketing Group. And I started doing radio, because this podcast started as a radio show. I started doing radio interviewing and broadcasting in February of 2010. at CGSF radio station at SFU, Simon Fraser University, in Vancouver. And 20, I believe it was 2011, that I first interviewed someone from an MPMG, or back then as they were known, LMPR campaign. And I believe it was also a dancer named Edmund or Edwin or Edward, something like that. But they tend to focus a lot on, dance, independent theater. And it was kind of funny because I moved to Toronto around the same time they got a Toronto office in 2017, because they're based out of Vancouver. And it's sort of been this, great, symbiotic relationship for all these years. And, I guess the working relationship has been 12 years now. And, for whatever reason, we work well together, and they keep coming back, and I'll keep taking their clients, and it seems to be a really business relationship that's worked out quite well. I just wanted to say that about MPMG, because they've been so good to me over the years. And this time they got me one of their UK based performers, which doesn't happen often, since a lot of their performers are heavily concentrated in either Vancouver or Toronto. But given that Fall for Dance North is an international festival, they do have some international performers for this campaign. The Fall for Dance North Festival is Toronto's premier international dance festival. It started on September 26th and goes until the end of the week, October 7th. And this is the ninth annual festival. And it's an showcases an innovative range of contemporary dance by emerging and established choreographers hailing from across the globe. Ninth annual festival also includes a diverse series of lives and digital offerings, including a full-length presentation of Ohad Naharan's inventive Kamayut, the inaugural Indigenous-led dance competition to Toronto Open, which was presented on Sunday. Or I guess it would have been Saturday, sorry, for Canada's National Truth and Reconciliation Day. There's also the second annual Film Dance Series, the sneak preview of a CBC docuseries in partnership with the National Ballet of Canada, and the return of the late night series Night Shift in support of Ontario-based dance makers. Yelter Ibrahimov, who is the artistic director, says this year's program represents a cultivated blend of emerging and established creators, many of whom will make their Toronto debuts. Some of the roster this year includes the Tony Award-winning Sonia Taye and the Olivier Award-winning Mithudhulezi November, among many, many others. And of course, one of the people involved is Jamal Berkmar, who is a UK-based choreographer and dancer. And I got to speak with Jamal about what it was like being a part of this festival, how his piece, I Think We Should Start Over, came together, and just his overall process of, choreography and working with the dancers, and how he works with music and precision and intimacy and all these things that go into creating a piece. And a piece that's shorter than maybe we're used to seeing from a professional dance troupe. I always enjoy talking about dance. Maybe it's because my mother used to be a dancer, but there's always a certain intimacy whenever I talk to a dancer or choreography, and not, so much in the emotion, but for whatever reasons, I think dancers are able to illuminate and elucidate the ideals of art and being a working artist in ways others can't. And that's not to say that, all my good interviews have only been dancers. No, I've had fantastic interviews with a wide range of people, but it strikes me that whenever I've talked to someone involved in dance, there's just a different sort of level and atmosphere about it. And Jamal Berkmar, is of course no exception to the rule, but I will let you be the judge of that. And here is my conversation with Jamal Berkmar. Jamal, how you doing, my man? How's it going?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. I'm glad we could do this finally. I was I was away. I messed that last call up and then I was away for a week. So yeah, but
Oh.
nice to be here.
But hey, I mean, Italy's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, Italy's great. I go every year. Like I just happened to end up doing a job there, and
Oh,
so I'm
nice.
there every
Yeah.
couple months to do some more work. So yeah, it's lovely.
Well, there you go. But speaking of works and speaking of gigs, you're taking part in the new Fall for Dance North.
Yes.
How did you come to be a part of this? I know you work with Kendoko as part of
Yeah.
this.
Yeah, so Kanduku got in touch with me in oh gosh, probably sort of the back end of last year, and to talk about making a new work. They wanted to make a work for sort of outdoor spaces. And yeah, we just had a lot of conversations. I think I was actually traveling around North America at the time, and we had a lot of calls about a new piece. And then I think it might have even been later. So we did about 4 weeks together at the beginning of this year, and made this work. And I think just before it started, I think just as it started touring, somebody had seen it, or someone got in touch with Kanduko and invited the company and the work out to the festival. So yeah, that's kind of how it all went down.
You mentioned performing outdoors, and that's really interesting, I think, especially for dance, because, I mean, obviously any performance space can affect what you're saying, but because dance is, it feels much more intimate than perhaps other mediums of art, and it's almost like the intimacy is kind of canceled out by this big outdoor space. So how do you sort of balance almost those two extremes?
Yeah, it's also not just intimacy. You're not in charge of people's attention as much, which is really interesting. Like, I think about going to see a movie in a cinema, or I think about watching a movie at home. And at a cinema, they're so in control of me and my like and the way in which I'm giving it attention. But at home, there's sort of the distraction of a phone or being able to pause a laptop and go and do something. So there's a thing around recognizing that you're not as you'd like to be. So I think that when we were making the work, it felt like that we still had like a journey that we were going on. Me and the dancers talked a lot. It was really, really collaborative. I feel like we would spend sort of a long period working, and then we'd just sort of sit and talk about the work, and then an hour would go by, and then we'd get back into working again. And so I think it felt really important that they had a really clear journey that they understood throughout every moment. But that also that like there was just a really clear visual idea. And so I think this work works with text quite a lot, and it goes through, without being too spoilery about it, it goes through lots of different sort of podcasts. And I think that you can kind of fall in and out of it, and you can just sort of see the visual, or you can just sort of follow the words that are being spoken, or you can follow the relationship with the dancers. And so I think that we didn't want to have too sort of clear a narrative where you had to really pay attention to every one thing throughout the 15 minutes, and more that you can kind of pick up the bits that really interest you. There's a lot of movement to like very specific text and very specific sort of musical relationships. And then there's a lot that's a little more sort of playful, slightly improvised and slightly freer. And I just think there was enough in that that we had to kind of balance how focused people might be in an outdoor space, that we had to really like hold their attention, and then we had to like let them sort of sit back a little bit. And yeah, so playing with attention felt like our sort of our focus for the composition of the work, I think.
And the program that you're part of, Heartbeats, looks a lot at sort of love and human connection. And I think because dance is so, you know, visual, and there's not often dialogue, I think the theme of love can often get heightened in a way, or almost any emotion. Why is dance in particular such a powerful medium to be able to express emotions and feelings that may not be able to come across as strongly in other forms of art?
Why is that? I think it really depends on the different ways. I once read a quote about a certain director. I think it was Terrence Malick, and it was about his movies. And I think that someone was arguing they're very like, they're hard movies to watch, Terrence Malick's movies. They're like, especially if you're a fan of his, because they can really feel like big moving paintings, and actually story feels like quite the lesser part of it. But I remember the quote was, sometimes you need the emotion supplied to you, and sometimes you need it evoked. And I think dance does a really good job of evoking feeling. It doesn't necessarily always give you the feeling. Of course, there are some really strong narrative-based choreographers who very much go through a clear journey of like, you know, this is how they're feeling here, this is how they're feeling here, this is how they're feeling here. But actually, it's, I think, as an art form, it probably evokes feeling really, really well, partly because it asks the audience to put themselves into it. They ask the audience to acknowledge their own sort of journey. I was thinking recently about a project that I did when I was a student, that someone had a really like clear sort of response to, and they had these ideas about what the work was. And I remember looking and going, that's not what it was, because that's what I had made it that way. And then actually realized they were putting all of their own personal sort of situations on top of it. So I think probably more than most, I think abstract sort of art is the closest you can come to a space where the work, don't realize that the work is saying something through how you feel about it. So yeah, I think that's probably why. I think that there's you know, the scale of what people can think about when it comes to emotions is so varied, and dance and movement takes care of this one area that requires people to maybe look a little bit deeper. We know when we're sad, we know when we're happy, but there are other feelings that are often much sort of more unconscious. And I think movement is a really great way of discovering something that you probably didn't even know you were feeling or weren't feeling at a different time. So yeah, I think it's really good for that.
But I think is it more of a challenge to try and convey all that in a much shorter time frame than maybe we're used to seeing from a typical dance piece.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah. I don't know. yeah, it is. I mean, I guess the attempt wasn't necessarily to try and, I guess we were attempting to just look at one thing really, really clearly, and then allow other people to find other things through that really, really clearly. So the work really talks about podcasts. It really thinks about language. It really thinks about communication. And we had, from our perspectives, the three of us who were making the show, Maya and myself and Cara, and gosh, I'm flagging on people's names now. This is a failure of mine, is to remember everyone's names all the time. But I think that we really forced ourselves to decide what of this work mattered for us. And so I think that then we were not necessarily concerned with trying to display the full breadth of emotion that we felt could be picked up. We were just really focused on what we felt mattered. So yeah, I think that was what, yeah, I think that was what we were sort of, we were, that was our main focus. And then it meant that we didn't have to necessarily worry about trying to portray everything that we would do in an hour in sort of 15 minutes. Yeah, I think I'm thrown a little bit because I'm just annoyed at myself for forgetting a person's name. But yeah, I think that's sort of that's the only thing you can really do when you're making a work that short, is just be really, really attentive to your own personal kind of journey with it. Yeah.
And, you know, you're coming all the way from London to Toronto. What are you most excited about getting to come to Canada for this performance?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not going to be the one getting to go. It's going to be the dancers getting to go. Maya and Caroline. So I think I'm just excited to talk to them about it, to be honest. They've gotten to tour it around the country, which has been really lovely. And weirdly, I keep missing them. They were in Leeds and then I was in Leeds just after. And I get really nice updates from Caroline all the time, which is great. So I think I'm looking forward to hearing about their experience. But for me, it's nice. It always feels nice to have work over there, knowing that someone might like Google my name afterwards or look us up on Instagram, and to kind of find out more about the work that I make and that I make with other companies and other dancers. So, you know, yeah, that's the best thing. I'm incredibly jealous. I think I found out that they were going to, I was at a day festival and I bumped into one of the team at Kanduko and they said, oh, by the way, we're taking it to Canada. And I was uber jealous. So yeah, it's gonna be great. It's gonna be fun either way. The day that it's performed there, I'm gonna feel like I'm there anyway. So yeah.
Does it feel a little bit strange, you know, given the fact that you created this work and you don't sort of get to see the results of it as much?
It does, because I think that so we had a really like intense 4-week process together, and then I think that there's a mistake in thinking that, well, then it's done and the work is performed. The process sort of keeps going, and so I think about works where they have toured and I have gotten to go with them just because it's the way it's gone, because it's maybe it's my own work and there's no one else to tour it. And that's a really interesting journey of watching things change and morph and watching us, you know, find new things or even get like quite lazy with certain things or and having to find new ways to explore them. So I think ultimately it's more like it's not that I don't get to see the results of it, it's that I don't get to see the continued journey of it that feels really interesting. And that, and again, it gets communicated to me. Like, I remember when they did the show, I think it was the one in Leeds, it might be the one in London. One of them reached out to me, and I think it was Caroline spoke to me about the one in Leeds, and then Maya spoke to me about the one in London about how great it was. And I just remember sort of thinking, like, I can't learn anything about that other than through those words. So there's it's just a lot of learning that you miss out on as a maker, learning about the way in which your movement and language grows and changes. So it's data essentially that I'm missing out on. But no, I'm kind of used to it at this point. I've been doing this for almost a decade, and I would say that most pieces I've made, I've only really got to see performed once if I'm lucky, twice if if I can chase it. I just had a piece tour around the UK with another company at the beginning of the year, and I only got to see it once, and it did quite a number of dates. So it becomes part of the job, really.
It strikes me that, being a choreographer is maybe a little bit similar to being like an author or a director. You create this thing, you enjoy it, you give birth to it, and then you sort of, give it to the world for others to enjoy. How do you feel about that comparison?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I reckon that's probably the journey with all artists. I think if anything, choreographers get slightly more because we often will do like I mean like this like getting to talk about the work here or like I think probably more often than not when I think about post-show talks, it's usually choreographers. Very rarely do I get to see a director talk about their work, at a cinema or it's very. I think we get to speak about it a lot more than maybe we should. So yeah, no, yeah, you're totally right. It's always out of a person's hands. I'm always shocked when people sort of speak to me who I've bumped into and they say, oh, I saw this recently, I really love this, and I had lots to say. And I've not seen it for 6 months. So I've like forgotten about the whole experience, and then I'm like relearning about it all over again from them. So that's really cool. That's really interesting when that happens. I bumped into someone recently who, oh no, they messaged me on Instagram. I'd post a link to the work when it was in London, and someone replied, I've just seen it. Great. And they started to tell me the bits that they liked. And I was sort of sat at the other end of the message going, oh yeah, we did do that. And we just like forgotten all the things that we'd made in the work. So I got reminded about it from an audience member, which was great.
So the act, you said you worked on it for 4 weeks. How would you describe sort of the overall collaborative process when you're actually putting it together?
I mean, for this work, it was a lot of discussion, and it was a lot of making sure that every moment made sense to the dancers and myself as well. Because we made a lot of 4 weeks is quite a long time for a work of that length, and there's space for you to almost overthink it. And so, yeah, there was just the work has a lot that revolves around communication and, the things we say, the things we don't say. And so yeah, we talked about that at such length, sometimes in ways that didn't quite relate to the piece. Sometimes it was just about the three of us talking about our own personal relationships to this thing. And so that added more color to the work, but wasn't necessarily like the driving intention behind each moment. But my process is really musical. My process is really about dancers. So there was a real, yeah, it was really, really collaborative. The work I'd made just before that was kind of the opposite, where I went in and I was really like, I want this, I want this, I want this. And it was very it was like quite ego driven. Whereas this was none of that at all. It was just we sat in a room together and kind of came up with the piece together. I think I went in with one idea. And then very quickly that unraveled the minute I met the dancers and the minute we just sort of started talking about what the work was. So yeah, really, really collaborative. I think from the beginning to the end, it was just a journey of discovery, both in movement and tension and sound and dialogue. Like, yeah, even one of the sort of podcasts was Caroline had said, "Oh, I think you should listen to this," and then I listened to it and went, "Right, that should go in." So we're just feeding ideas to each other for 4 weeks.
How different would you say the end result became from, maybe the initial idea or the initial creation?
Pretty radically, yeah, pretty radically. I have to say, I don't really even remember what the first conversations I had with Kanduko were, or even with the dancers were. I think that I don't think I could have predicted this is the journey we were going on. So, if I started off thinking it was going to be red, it ended up blue. It really was a different piece, to be honest.
You've been talking a lot about intention and, film and specifically theater and dance. They all have beats, they all have their moments. How specific do you have to get when choreographing? Because, dance, because there is no dialogue, everything, like we said before, is enhanced in dance. So how specific do you have to be at those sort of certain moments in time?
Probably less so, because I think that ultimately, because of that conversation we just had a moment ago about other people placing themselves into the work and onto the work and onto what they're seeing, they'll almost make their own beats and their own trend, sort of story moments. What I would say is that I think for me personally, this will be different for lots of different choreographers, but for me personally, my journey seems to be in thinking about the way in which I like to think about a person's focus, think about when they should be really lasered in on one person, when they should be seeing the whole picture, when they have to like lean forward or lean back, seems to be a big thing for me. And so I think my beats were all compositional, where we would do something and it felt like it was sort of taking up the whole space. And being outdoor, you're so affected by the world around you. And it felt like going, okay, we've really had the audience sort of having this wash over them. Now let's have them hyper focus on this relationship to music and movement, text and movement. Okay, cool. Now we've exhausted them with that. Let's go back to this. So it was really like, it was really my beats as such were all about audience and their focus. And then the intention, I guess, is easy to like wrap around those moments where you think, well, I really focused here, so what is it we're trying to attach to this moment? Well, they're really like they can get to sit back here and be a little bit calmer with what their focus, what are we giving them as an overarching theme? So I think it was more like that. I remember watching a video about Christopher Nolan talking about the way he made Memento, because I can't remember, I've not watched that movie in ages, but it moves backwards and somewhat forwards, but he drew the image of a pretzel. And it was interesting thinking of the image of a pretzel defining story. And I think it's kind of the same for us that like we were drawing an image based on the individual person's attention span and the way they focus and the way they would unravel and the way they would lean forwards and backwards, and also where they breathe, like are they focusing, are they relaxed breathing, are they holding their breath? So all of those things then form how we were thinking about the journey of the story. Which I think was like the way I was thinking about this work. It's not the way I would think about all works, but that's the way I was thinking about this work for sure.
You mentioned your process is musical, and I'm curious, choosing the right piece of music to dance to is key. How does that process work for you? Does it come before? Does it come after? During?
I would have to say it's like 50-50. Sometimes I begin a process and I know all the music beforehand. Sometimes I begin a process, I don't know any of the music. Other times I begin and I think I know all the music, and then after a week I'm wrong and I've got to go in a different direction. So I would say that they all give me very, very different things, those ways of working. This way was that rather than knowing what music we were going to perform to, I knew what music we were going to make to. So we made a lot of the work to different genres of music, and we created a lot of different like sort of movement ideas that were related to those, but then we got rid of all that sound. And actually we found the text that we were finding, we found along the way, and then the final song that we found like two or three days, maybe into the last week. So yeah, so it's interesting because I think about this a lot. Like I'm just about to start a new process in a month, and I feel like I've nailed the music. I feel like I know what we're doing, but ultimately I'm very aware that like on day one I might just go, this is all wrong, and have to find it through the process. So yeah, music is like key, but it's not so key that there's only one way of doing it, essentially. Yeah.
We haven't actually mentioned the title of your piece, which is "I Think We Should Start Over." Was there the significance of calling your piece that? Where how did that come into being?
I don't know if this is like a spoiler, but it's one of the lines in the show, and it begins. It's sort of these two people are talking, and they just can't quite like something about the way that they're talking to each other feels like they're on different wavelengths. And even though they feel like they're doing this, like what we're doing, it feels like they're sort of all over the place. And one of them just says, I just think we should just basically just says, I think we should just start again. I think we should just start. And I think we loved that as like a way to start a podcast or a way to start a conversation, that you recognize the sort of fractured way that you're both communicating. And one of you just goes, can we just start this whole conversation over again? And yeah, so then the show sort of became that. It became these two people navigating the way in which they would talk to each other, talk over each other, talk at each other, sort of talking and mirroring. We watched this really great video about Noah Baumbach and the way that he writes his movies and the way he writes characters, sort of speaking to almost a mirror, hoping that the person they're speaking to will reflect back the things they once said about them. So yeah, it was really just about the way in which we fail to say what we mean to say all the time. And yeah, and that's where the title came from. I guess the whole show is them going, can we start this? Can we start again? Can we go again? Yeah, that's where it came from.
It strikes me as almost maybe then a bit meta, because in dance and in theater, when you're rehearsing, you're like, hey, can we take it from the top? Can we start again? Can we start again? Does that kind of factor in at all, would you say, in sort of?
It didn't, but you're absolutely right to mention that. Yeah, totally. I mean, the amount of times I've sat in a rehearsal and thought something's off here, even though they're hitting the counts, they're hitting the space, I go, can we go again? And I don't quite know why. So yeah, I think it's the sense of something being wrong rather than the sight of it, rather than seeing it going. I remember my sister's a singer, and she did a gig. She has a show in Leicester that she calls Mahalia Presents, and she does it in New York now a lot as well. And she invites guests to come and sing, and she brought this singer whose name I won't remember. And this woman is doing this; that she's doing her set, and she gets to like the third or fourth track, and I don't know what she'd perceived, but she had the audience's attention in a really nice way. And then I think she felt that like she was bringing the mood down, even though we were all just watching and adoring. And she's playing and she's like strumming her guitar. And then she just stops and she just goes, I don't like what I've done here. I don't like the mood. I'm going to move on and go to the next song. And it wasn't that she did anything wrong. She didn't fumble her line. She didn't play the song wrong. Her voice was great. She just felt that there was a sense of something that wasn't quite right. And she just said, I'm going to move on. I'm going to start over. I'm going to go to something else. And I really, really love that. I love that, like, it's not just like the mistake of a count or the mistake of saying a word wrong, or just a minute ago where I thought I'd forgot someone's name, but I haven't. I said their name. It's, my brain was doing something off there. It was more that like there's a sense that something feels weird. There's a sense that something feels off, and so we start again. So yeah, it totally is a little meta.
We've been talking a lot about like interpretation and intentions and meaning and all that. What do you think, or what do you hope, what do you want audiences to take away from this piece?
I feel like I made a decision a long time ago to never think about that, to just like decide to make something and then see. And do you know what? It feels like such a cop out of an answer, But it's more to just say that, like, I hope they take something, and I hope that there's something for them, even if it's not something that they immediately recognize. So I guess that is always going to be my answer for that question, because I'm terrified of deciding what I think is important in a work. You know, the amount of pieces of art that I've stared at that I'm like gathering information that has nothing to do with what the original creator made. And I'm thinking, great, I'm fine with that. I'm fine as that being the thing that I do. Unless I make something really, really pointed that's about saying something, I'm very rarely saying anything. Someone asked me recently if you could get one thing out of, like, what's one thing you hate about works when you see it? And I said, I just hate when someone says something really important. I don't want to hear anything important. I just want to watch the show and then decide what's important for myself. So yeah, it's a bit of a cop out. I'm sorry, but yeah, that's my answer for sure.
But I suppose it's better to have the audiences feel something as opposed to indifference or
indifference,
right?
100%. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
You know, it's curious. There are so many different numbers, pieces, programs in this festival. Have you thought about just what it means to be, you know, one of this many showcases? Because like Fall for Dance North is one of the biggest things in Canada.
Right. I think that there's an odd thing. I don't know how things are in Canada, and I don't know how things are in every country, but there's a thing at the moment. There's a real state of concern for me personally, and I know for other artists, about the ground with which we're all occupying. And so that at the moment, and I said this to someone 2 days ago, every performance that I'm attached to, the only feeling I can really muster up is gratitude at the moment. I'm finding it hard to get beyond that because it just, everything feels so nervy. And so maybe Canada's one, I don't know, maybe it's this wonderful utopia where there's just funding for the arts all the time and there's audiences and yada, 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 all of those things. But like, when I've seen little moments of these guys on tour and I've seen audiences going to the center, I'm like, oh my God, that makes me feel amazing. So that's the largest, I can't even really think beyond that at the moment. And I'm hoping that things will change to the point that I can start to think more pointedly about, wow, this festival here and these people and this. But at the moment, I'm just like, every time there's a show, I'm breathing, going, oh, lovely, great. I get to enjoy that. And even with our own work, we're putting together our tour for next year. And it's just like every date that comes along to us, I'm like, whoo, thank God for that. It's lovely.
I'll just say Canada is not a utopia.
Okay, great.
I work in the film industry, and even up in Canada, we're being hit, you know, they were hit by the strikes pretty hard.
Yeah, of course.
So it's, I mean, even though our unions are different, like, because it's just a lot of American productions. And so it's a bit dicey, you know. And I have, like, you know, my sister's a musician, and so we all feel it a little bit. You know, not to touch on this too much, but what do you make of not just the state of the arts, but like, I guess the overall approach and appreciation for the arts? Where do you think we are in that, because it seems to have changed a little bit after the pandemic?
Again, like, I feel like I only ever really speak for what I know, and what I know really well is the UK. I could say this. Yeah, my dad used to work for the Arts Council here in the UK a long, long time ago, and we would have conversations about, even when I was young, like, I don't even think I knew we were talking about this sort of this topic, even before I decided I wanted to be a dancer and a choreographer. But we would talk about the things that felt a bit iffy. And I think that, like, a lot of those things he was concerned about almost like two decades ago have somewhat come to fruition a little bit. And I think that ultimately the worth in all of this it can't be measured by just pounds and pennies. It's like, I wish I could grab every single person in the country and say, listen, this is what it means to have a country filled with art. And this is what it means to go to the theater, even if you don't like the show. This is what it means to sit in a gallery, even if you don't understand it. Like, this is the value in it. So there's maybe a sense that we haven't made ourselves as, even though we are, I think, as crucial as I believe it is, I don't know if we've really done a great job of making people clear of that. And then I guess there's always going to be concerns around funding, but I'm not sure necessarily that I feel that there's been a real movement into particularly new media and particularly the new audience and thinking about what this next generation of audiences and how they're going to interact with art is. I am going on my own personal journey over this next like 6 months into thinking about that a lot more, thinking about how I can focus on audiences, how I can focus on what these new audiences want. The word content comes up a lot for me. I don't like the word, but it seems like a necessary thing to do battle with. I spent a lot of time last in like 2021 thinking really small just about Instagram and thinking about building that. And like, I did that and that was really exciting and that did things for me that brought me to places. So I think that there's always going to be a need to fight for ourselves and to like try and get funding bodies and governments and audiences to recognize the value in it. But I think ultimately there's going to have to be a larger conversation about the way in which we are thinking about the next sort of 50 years of audiences, 50 years of people and of communities and networks. And I'm not sure yet we're having the most up-to-date conversation about what that is here at home. I think we're still using the methods that we've been using for like 30 years, essentially. And ultimately, things move quickly and, you know, people access the world differently than we did. I was talking to my little brother, who's 15, and we were comparing the gesture for picking up a telephone. And like we all did it like this, whereas he does it like this.
Right.
And that blew my mind a little bit. And I was like, oh yeah, cool. He sees the world in a radically different way to me. And you can't really see it, but like he lives differently. He exists so differently than I ever could imagine. And I thinking about how to get him and people like him and his friends into theaters for the next 20 years, you have to think radically differently about the way in which she got me into theaters. I got into theater because my mom took me to a dance class. She was like, he has a joy of it. He does it. I'm going to take him. She drove us all the time. She drove me and my siblings. And that was the journey.
Yeah.
The journey for kids now, the journey for teens, the journey for young adults, it's different. That journey to the theater is going to be so different. And I want to focus more on that a little bit over this next sort of 2 to 3 years.
Well, the Fall for Dance North Festival runs from September the 26th to October the 7th. And I think We Should Start Over is on October 4th and 5th as part of the Heartbeats Signature Program. Jamal Bergmeier, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers. I'm glad we got it. I'm glad we got connected.
Yeah, it's great.
Cheers.
Thanks, dude.
And once again, that was my conversation with choreographer Jamal Bergmeier. His piece, I Think We Should Start Over, done in collaboration with Kandoko from London, UK, will be part of the Heartbeats Signature Program as part of the Greater Fall for Dance North Festival in Toronto. And that will be performed on October 4th and 5th at 7:30 p.m. at the Meridian Hall. Also a part of that program, you will have Mascara, Bliss, and Heart Drive. You can check it out at mpmgarts.com or simply Google Fall for Dance North. That about does it for me this week. My Thanks to Jamal Berkmar. I hope to have the podcast up and running proper within the next couple of weeks, but you know me, sometimes I say that and it'll be 3 months later. Anyway, thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now.